This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
The litigation that's been put forward in Texas seeking to prohibit people from accessing mifepristone, you know, in the court embracing stigma over science, in my opinion, there.
The passage of time has generally moved us in the direction of increased dignity and rights for members of the LGBTQ community in this country, with marriage equality officially recognized in 2015. But since then, the U.S. Supreme Court has taken a sharp turn to the right, and we're now looking at the erosion of some hard-fought gains. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to Sasha Bookert, a senior attorney at Lambda Legal, about the many angles from which the right wing is attacking America's LGBTQ community. We look at the battle to maintain fundamental human rights, talk about the struggles that transgender children are facing in states like Florida and Iowa, and examine the impact that uniformed LGBTQ personnel are making in the military, nearly a decade into achieving the right to serve openly. We also distinguish high-leverage legal issues from provocative but less substantive culture war misdirects. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Sasha Bookert. She is a senior attorney at Lambda Legal. Sasha, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks so much for having me on your program.
So we had the executive director of Lambda Legal, Kevin Jennings, on Sea Change Radio. He did a good job of kind of recapping where we were at the time in terms of LGBTQ rights, and things are obviously fluid. We have a very active right wing that is making hay wherever they can to try to escalate and divide people based on what seemed like pretty set law at this point. Why don't you give us a recap of what's happened on your front in terms of the cases you're keeping an eye on in the last 18 months? The Supreme Court's decision in the Dobbs abortion case and the concurring opinion by Clarence Thomas really seemed to open the door for further restrictions of rights within the LGBTQ community, contraception, same-sex marriage, etc.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I think it's helpful, in my opinion, just to think back a little bit further to, you know, the Trump administration and the attacks that we saw on the federal front. You know, the attacks that we're seeing on the state level, you know, certainly isn't new. You know, we've seen an uptick every year in the number of bills that are being filed, but it's really skyrocketed in the last year or two, for sure. Yeah, I think that, you know, after the Trump administration, you know, the far right, you know, was really activated, you know, during that time, and with the Biden administration coming in and moving quickly to, you know, address some of the, you know, the real damage that we saw on the federal level, you know, that was really a welcome, you know, relief that, you know, we had by, you know, doing things like rescinding the ban on open transgender military service and some of the, you know, healthcare attacks. But I think that also polarized and galvanized the far right to, you know, pursue discrimination wherever they can, in my opinion. and they really seized the moment there and moved to the state houses to try to inflict the harassment and discrimination that they couldn't do at the federal level, you know, targeting vulnerable communities. And I think that that's been supercharged, in my opinion, as you said, by the Dobbs decision that was issued, you know, just last year. It feels like it's been in place for 20 years in some ways. But, and there's been, you know, massive harm that's been done, you know, across the board. But I think there are some, you know, serious parallels, not just the clear language in the decision itself, you know, calling for, you know, the court to revisit cases involving LGBTQ folks and contraceptive care and privacy. That alone is troubling enough. But I think that one of the biggest concerns, you know, that, you know, and just talking about that in particular, you know, that decision and the impact it's had on the state attacks that we're seeing, is that, you know, the court in the decision throughout echoed what I would call a rallying cry from the far right with, you know, regard to the marriage equality fight, which is, you know, this demand that the majority trample the civil and human rights protections for vulnerable communities and impose a majoritarian rule, you know, eliminate the backstop of the Supreme Court, basically. And throughout the Dobbs decision, the Supreme Court, you know, repeats this, you know, motif that these kinds of decisions should be decided at the state level. And, you know, that's troubling because, you know, we're not just talking about, you know, general public welfare decisions about the appropriate age for alcohol consumption or, you know, things that, you know, have traditionally been decided by the states. We're talking about constitutional fundamental rights that if they aren't protected at the Supreme Court, states are going to do what they're doing. They're going to run rampant. And, you know, unfortunately, we've seen this from, you know, the civil rights movement going back to the 60s that, you know, unfortunately, you know, the way that the a lot of states, you know, run their business is that, you know, it's a if given the opportunity, they're going to seize it and they're going to impose a majoritarian, you know, terror on, you know, the vulnerable, you know, few. And I think that there's also, you know, something to be said about the growing polarization in the country overall. You know, there for a lot of years there were split houses. You know, the Senate could be Democratic and the House could be Republican, and that was the case for in a lot of states. But I think for the first time ever, there's only two states now that have opposite parties running different houses in the legislature. So I think there's this growing polarization that's led to, you know, some of the growing partisan-sponsored agenda. But I think another thing that just has to be tacked on to this discussion is the, you know, the impact that partisan gerrymandering has had on these issues. It's, you know, the folks that are pushing a lot of this anti-LGBTQ and particularly anti-trans legislation, you know, aren't appealing to moderate Americans anymore. You know, they're appealing only to, you know, the folks that are the farthest on the right that they need to appeal to win their primary to move forward in their election. And you know, that's you know, got a serious human cost that we've already seen in this process. So it's a really difficult time.
Indeed. And why don't you take a step back also and explain to the listeners who missed Kevin Jennings on the show, the mission of Lambda Legal. And then obviously your resources are limited. You can't fight every fight. Where does Lambda Legal view the real constitutional threats beyond the clickbait?
Yeah, so Lambda Legal is the country's largest and longest serving historical legal organization working to advance the rights of LGBTQ folks and people living with HIV. We were founded in 1973 and we are celebrating our 50th anniversary, you know, and we've, you know, been working on seminal cases such as, you know, the Lawrence v. Texas, you know, decision was litigated by Lambda Legal. Bragdon v. Abbott was litigated by Lambda Legal. We were involved with the Obergefell v. Hodges litigation. You know, the list is, you know, goes on and on and on to even, you know, our most current wins that we've had in the courts, you know, addressing things like access to identity documents for trans folks, access to health care, protections for people living with HIV, the decriminalization of people living with HIV. So it's just, it goes across the board for sure. So I'm just very proud to work for Lambda Legal. I'm going to miss things, you know, in responding to your question about, you know, the how we are viewing, you know, the threats and how to respond to the threats and what we're seeing being passed in the state legislatures in particular. The strategy from the far right has clearly been, and this has been mirrored on the federal level, you know, with the changeover in the House of Representatives to, you know, go after sports. They've pulled sports, you know, and they want to prohibit. It involves, you know, policies that ban trans kids from playing sports consistent with their gender identity, you know, which means banning them from playing altogether. And they feel like this is something that's, you know, something that can pry apart trans people from the rest of the LGBTQ movement and to, you know, really seize upon, you know, people's insecurity about sports. And, you know, everybody is concerned about their kid and the trophy. And they feel like this is a real winner and they want to start with this. And they did last year. They passed a number of these laws throughout the country.
It seems like such an antiquated argument. I remember as a kid in the 70s, the Renee Richards debate. That was like 1975 or 7 or something like that. And it's like, here we are 45 years later, and it's like it's water cooler conversation again on cable news.
Yeah, it's kind of it's unbelievable, especially given the fact that, you know, and trans kids are less than, they're 1.4% of the U.S. population. So statistically, it's not even possible for them to dominate sports. And B, as a, you know, person who participates in sports myself, I'm always sad to see the low, low numbers of trans kids that are actually participating. And C, there have been inclusive policies in places like Washington State and California, you know, for going on 20 years now, where kids have been able to participate and consistent with their gender identity. And the sky hasn't fallen, you know, and it's one of the things that actually drives me out of my tree the most in doing this work is that the folks on the far right, they seize upon this lack of familiarity that people have with trans people, and they really try to make it sound like this is some new dangerous thing. And if you allow trans kids to participate, you know, it's just gonna, they're these super athletes that are just gonna take over every sport possible. And by the way, you know, the legislators that are sponsoring this legislation over and over again, there's a great AP article about this, can't name one trans athlete in their state. They can't name one. And, you know, most of the time there's a handful of trans kids that are like 10 in Utah out of 68,000 kids that are participating. You know, so it's just my main point here is just that there have been policies that have been placed forever, and these threats that are always, you know, they're used to scare people and fearmonger, you know, just have not proven to be the case. Heaven knows I was just a young boy, didn't know what I wanted to be. I was every little hungry schoolboy, bright and pure, and I guess it wasn't.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Sasha Bookert. She is a senior attorney at Lambda Legal. So, Sasha, we were talking about trans rights in sports. Would that be considered a key strategic front for Lambda Legal to fight on, or is it more of a misdirection by the right, where they're just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks in the culture wars?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is certainly their strategy, is to you know, get a foot in the door and try to create a space for discrimination. You know, if you can demonize a segment of the population in one way, that opens the door to dehumanize and demonize them and discriminate against them across the board. And I think that is certainly their strategy. Our response to that has been, no, we're not going to let you get a foot in the door. You know, and we stood up and we are fighting that. You know, we won a huge victory in a challenge that was, you know, brought in West Virginia fighting back against one of those bills. And, you know, the court issued a really powerful injunction stopping the law from going into effect, you know, while the litigation proceeds. You know, unfortunately, the same judge, after a year and a half of stopping the law from going into effect, you know, let it go into effect, you know, for this one trans girl that just wanted to run with her team. And, you know, we appealed to the Fourth Circuit and, you know, received a favorable decision so that she could try out and participate. But the state of West Virginia felt like it was so important to prevent this one 14-year-old girl from running cross country that they appealed it to the Supreme Court, you know, who denied it, you know, thankfully. So, you know, Becky can run with, and this is what's really important, you know, what's at stake here is that this isn't, you know, it's not just a political strategic discussion, I think what gets lost sometimes is the impact on real kids. You know, these, you know, and even a judge that was appointed by the Trump administration in an Idaho decision that enjoined their ban on sports kids, on kids from playing sports, you know, clarified that, you know, when you push forward these policies, you know, the impact it has is that you're banning them altogether, because as every trans kid I've ever talked to that wants to play sports has communicated to me, you know, if these bans go into effect, they're just not going to play. And that the harm that has, the irreparable long-term harm it has, you know, is just awful. It means that they're not going to be able to bond with their peers. They're not going to gain all those things that kids learn, you know, through sports, discipline, stick-to-itiveness, you know, learn teamwork, leadership, you know, all those things are just, you know, gone, you know, for those kids because of, you know, a handful of legislators that are trying to appease their far-right base.
And not every 14-year-old wants to be Rosa Parks, right? They don't necessarily want to go through a legal fight like Becky did.
Oh, yeah, no. And especially given, you know, the current climate, you know, where, you know, unfortunately, all the these television shows, you know, these news shows that, you know, they just really seize upon this, and the language has just gotten so aggressive towards trans people. You know, they're talking about eradicating trans people, you know, and those messages trickle down, you know, to, you know, kids in school, and they, you know, and parents are frankly terrified, and families are terrified, you know, in states where, you know, they've really gone after trans people in ways that I've never seen in my lifetime. And it's just a really, really frightening moment.
What are some of the other fronts that Lambda Legal is keeping an eye on where they think they need to be strategic in fighting back?
One of the most concerning threats that we're seeing now are the attempts to prohibit trans folks from, especially trans kids, from obtaining health care, you know, to treat gender dysphoria. You know, they've really gone out of their way to embrace stigma over science. And it's not just with, you know, regard to the healthcare that trans folks need. It's also, you know, the litigation that's been, you know, put forward in Texas seeking to prohibit people from accessing mifepristone, you know, and the court embracing stigma over science, in my opinion, there.
I can't remember the state, but aren't there some, if you dive into the details, there's some pretty horrific pieces of legislation that are trying to be set forward where there's an actual like gender inspection and things that a child should not have to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, that really goes to the, you know, the sports ban legislation that we're seeing. And a lot of them do contain these, you know, genital verification procedures, you know. And, you know, again, you know, the point needs to be made. And this isn't why these bills shouldn't go forward. You know, I mean, it's part of it. But, you know, I think that what people forget is the impact this will have, heightened scrutiny that will be placed upon any kid that doesn't fit gender stereotypes. You know, if your kid happens to not look like what the stereotype of a girl should look like, you know, the other team has the right to, you know, impose this law to inspect genitals if they have questions, you know, and it just, you know, really feeds into, you know, a lot of the distrust in gender verification.
Just that term, gender verification, seems so screwed up.
And there's a great New York Times article about this. This isn't new. This goes back like, you know, 50, 60 years, you know, where they were, you know, where there was a ton of scrutiny. And it's just an awful, awful process. So, yeah, it definitely is concerning. You know, but the you know, going back to the healthcare, you know, question, you know, a lot of these states, you know, like Texas, for example, started to, you know, investigate parents who were providing care for their kids, you know, to treat gender dysphoria. You know, because they, you know, put forward all of these junk science arguments that are completely debunked, and Lambda Legal and ACLU stepped into the breach and, you know, filed lawsuits that prevented that from happening. You know, but we're starting to see, you know, similar legislation being introduced in places like Florida that still is seeking to try to strip care and eliminate. And it's so ridiculous too, because the same care that we're talking about that is provided for, you know, kids seeking care for gender dysphoria is the same exact treatment that's provided to other kids for other conditions. You know, so they talk about how dangerous this care is, but they're not trying to ban it for anybody but for trans kids. You know, so it's just deeply concerning.
And in terms of Obergefell being under threat, we thought that was settled law, but a lot of us thought Roe v. Wade was settled law long ago. So the Pandora's box has been opened by this activist Supreme Court, and it's pretty scary for a lot of Americans. How does Lambda Legal view the idea of it being settled law or not, like, are there some cases that you're keeping an eye on that that listeners should be aware of as they go through the dockets?
Yeah, I think that it's important to unpack a little bit about what the Dobbs decision, you know, says, and it's just important to reinforce that, you know, their reasoning for overturning, you know, Roe v. Wade in part and in large part was this argument that only, you know, the rights that the court views as rooted in history and tradition, you know, are protected, you know, under the Constitution.
Like slavery.
Check. Women can't vote. Yeah, so, you know, that's deeply problematic reasoning, obviously, and it's riddled with exceptions, you know, that we don't need to go into here, but the reasoning is not sound by any means, and I think it'll be viewed at in history as we view, you know, Plessy v. Ferguson and other, you know, horrific decisions. But it is, you know, this argument that, you know, basically does away with a lot of the reasoning that grounds the Lawrence v. Texas decision, you know, the decision that struck down, you know, laws that prohibit intimacy, you know, among same-sex couples, and Obergefell v. Hodges, you know, the fundamental right, you know, of same-sex couples to marry. You know, yes, the Congress did, you know, break its logjam and move forward and pass legislation this year that would protect marriages to some degree, but if a hostile state, take Iowa for example, which introduced legislation this year, decided to, you know, move a case up to the Supreme Court challenging that decision, you know, they could undermine the Obergefell v. Hodges in a really dangerous way by overturning it, which would allow states to refuse to, you know, advance, you know, same-sex recognition within that state. It would still be recognized because of the federal legislation that passed. But, you know, I think with the heightened animus that we're seeing towards the LGBTQ community, you know, of course, trans people and non-binary people are, you know, experiencing the brunt of this. But I think that you can start to see that that's not enough. Fascism is an endless appetite for rolling back human rights. And I feel like it won't end with non-binary and trans rights. We're already starting to see that, you know, with the attacks on drag queens.
Yeah, so that was one of my next questions, is this is getting a lot of press in Florida. It seems completely ridiculous on so many fronts and unenforceable, but is it a real legal threat or is it more a clickbaity? To me, it sounds so out of bounds legally that there isn't sound footing, but I'm not a lawyer.
No, I mean, you're right. It's First Amendment. If we have to compare, and comparisons are odious, but if we have to compare, I would say it's the most, you know, constitutionally suspect of them all. You know, it's a clear infringement on First Amendment principles, you know, but I have to just, you know, it's hard for me to say that, you know, with a straight face, though, and thinking about, you know, some of the folks that, you know, we as an organization opposed that were, you know, folks that were up for, you know, judicial nominees, you know, in the last administration, who had made no effort to hide their views about LGBTQ folks and civil rights and human rights generally. And I think we've seen some of the fallout from, you know, the folks that have been confirmed and placed in lifetime appointments on the bench. So, you know, it's hard to say, you know, how courts, you know, will come down on some of these issues. But it does demonstrate, though, that this is not the end. This is the beginning, I think, for a lot of these folks. And it's just so important that, you know, we continue to fight.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Sasha Bookert. She is a senior attorney at Lambda Legal. I know Lambda Legal is a nonpartisan organization, but looking at it through a more hopeful lens, if we can, for a second, all of this hateful legislation that's getting pushed forward in multiple states, it seems like political suicide from a strategic standpoint. If I were a Republican strategist and I was trying to gain a foothold in a younger demographic of a younger slice of the American electorate, I don't have the polling data in front of me, but I don't really see the end game for them, except it seems very short-sighted.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to speak in generalizations like this, but, you know, for, you know, a party who, you know, was focused on, you know, denying elections after January 6th, you know, it's just hard for me to see them, you know, doing anything but appealing to, you know, the folks that are on the farthest, you know, branch of the right wing tree. And I completely agree with you that, you know, the numbers, you know, of youth who are supportive of LGBTQ people is, you know, very, very high. And, you know, we will see that change, you know, if not, you know, in the next 10 to 20 years, you know, certainly after that. And it's just sad to witness, you know, the harm and damage that's going to be done, you know, during the interim. But I do feel like they're going to have to, you know, make those decisions at some point for sure.
And lastly, I wanted to touch on one issue in the culture wars that we heard a lot more about in the 80s and 90s, which was gays in the military. That was like this issue. And you're a openly transgender Marine. As somebody who has served their country, what's the status right now legally? And is that under threat? Are things moving in the right direction on that front with the Biden administration in place?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Biden administration came in and, you know, did away with that nonsense. You know, so look, folks had been serving, just talking about the open trans, you know, service. I mean, just having, you know, the right to serve doesn't mean that you don't experience discrimination, but it's, you know, it certainly is reassuring to, you know, those families that, you know, they can continue to do their jobs without having to look over their shoulder. You know, and trans folks in particular have been serving since 2015 now, so they're, you know, we're almost going on 10 years. You know, but, you know, I'd love to say there's no threat.
And the military has not self-destructed in that period, I assume.
And this is exactly the hypothetical, you know, thing that drives me nuts. It's just so ridiculous, you know, this like, what if? Look, you've got boots on the ground, actual real statistics. And you know, all of these folks, all that's happened is these folks are serving with valor and distinction. So, yeah, it's just ridiculous. But there, you know, I can't say there is no threat, you know, if the administration changes and, you know, it's someone who is, you know, expressed, you know, great, if it's, you know, if the folks that are leading the ticket on the far right now, you know, yeah, I certainly do believe that, you know, they, you know, might come in and try to do something similar to what we saw in the last administration.
Sasha Bookert is a staff attorney at Lambda Legal. Sasha, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks so much, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Donna Summer, Anastasia Shevarenko and Inga, and Sylvester. To read a transcript of this show, go to seachangeradio.com. Stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast on our site or visit our archives to hear from Doris Kearns Goodwin, Gavin Newsom, Stuart Brand, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.